Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today. WMR.FM. It's the 12th of March, 2026. Ironically, or weirdly enough, tomorrow's Friday the 13th, and these days that's just kind of ominous and scary, almost as scary as this being the Ides of March.
That too.
This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls. And
hi, everybody.
It's been a another atrocious, dreadful, terrible, stupid, unnecessary death and destruction strewn week. It's I gotta be straight up, Christine. I'm having a hard time figuring out how to open shows, how to take a lot of the work that we do seriously. Given just the absurdity of how the companies that we tend to work around or work with, the way that their tools are being used to spread misinformation and create hatred and division and just death. It's soul crushing. Considering the world we work in these days.
Yeah, I think that's probably true for a lot of people, especially after we found out that the U.S. is responsible for the bombing of 175 children, well, mostly children, in Iran. So
the U.S. is the U.S. and the war in Iran is responsible for the deaths of thousands more, but the 175 children are terrifying, sad. Again, heart-wrenching, but we're talking about thousands of more people who have absolutely nothing to do with the incredibly evil Islamic regime, which is almost certainly at this point going to become more entrenched rather than displaced. This isn't about regime change or any of those lofty things. If it was, it would be, they would have actually had a plan. And you know what? This isn't an anti-war show. This isn't a political show. This shouldn't be. I mean, we're going to be talking about politics in a little bit because the world we work in is being used politically. So we kind of got to cover that. But Christine, I'm having a hard time finding the energy. As the show goes on, I'm going to find it. I swear to God. But right now, I'm just so angry and sad.
Yeah, I was very sad this week, too. Just had a feeling of dread all week, which I don't usually have. I'm usually able to come out of the abyss, you know, break my brain from it. But it was just, I think, just an overwhelming week for everybody, unfortunately.
Okay, so some things that happened. There's a couple of quick announcements. If you're having problems getting updated data in, say, in Looker Studio or through BigQuery, it's because, well, the bulk data export from Search Console to BigQuery ain't working. Has been working for several days. It's freaking people out.
And I don't have any updates that it's been fixed yet. So I'm assuming it's probably still not functional.
I was noticing that Search Console was slow in returning data for a few days. It seems to have caught up to itself again. But yeah, I hope they get that fixed fast. The data. Search Console crawl state data toggle selector buggy is buggy.
Yeah, the title's funny. Yeah, so there's a crawl stats report in Google Search Console. The data selector appears to be acting, in various words from Search Engine Roundtable, a little bit weird when it doesn't let you select the before or after date. So that's another one that I don't believe we have any update on it being fixed yet. Hopefully it'll be fixed pretty quickly. That is always frustrating when your date selection doesn't work and Google Search Console and you need data.
If you're running ads in the European Union, and you're running European Union political content, you have until March 31st to inform Google that you are running these ads. It's a European Union regulation. We haven't been able to figure out why.
Yeah, I don't. Do they have an election coming up or something? I don't know all their elections,
Well, I
so
mean,
maybe.
Europe is there's a Hungarian election that's coming up very soon. And I think
Okay.
Hungary's election comes up in April. But Europe is 30 some odd countries. There's always something happening.
That's very true. That's very true. It's not a single body, of course, like the states here, just different. You do need to make them aware. They also sent you and most likely sent you a message. Or an email, so check those to see if you have one, and they will tell you how to confirm or deny.
So, war on I the war in Iran, the war in Ukraine, the war in Gaza, the war after war after war after war, and the first casualty of war is
Truth.
truth. And right, this has never been a time to mess with perceptions of truth than there is now. There is so much fake video. Fake images, fake ideas, fake news stories being supported by incredibly detailed fake AI video. And it's hard to tell what's real and what isn't real these days, eh?
Yeah, because the models are so much more advanced, even from like a year ago when we talked about some of this back then. One fake video shows, this is from, sorry, MSN. One fake video shows a fictional barrage of Iranian missiles supposedly striking Tel Aviv. I saw that one. Second fake shows panicked people fleeing a supposed Iranian attack on an airport in Tel Aviv. A third one purports to show U.S. Special Forces personnel being held at gunpoint by Iranian troops. So there's just so many. So people need to be really, really careful when they share something to be sure that it is real. Maybe like have checked, regular news sources to see if they're also talking about this incident. And don't rely on your eyes because right now your eyes could deceive you because although AI doesn't make mistakes, the modern AI imagery and videos are getting so good, they may not. And you may share something that causes, causes concern and issues in other places not near you, and we don't want
One of the stories we're going to be covering later on in the show is going to note that the majority of users are now turning online, turning to user-generated content for news and information, rather than to news-gathering organizations, rather than a newspaper or the BBC or even MS Now. I would very strongly, strongly, strongly suggest people, if you see it online, if you see it on YouTube, if you see it as like user-generated content, go find a real source, somebody whose career depends on the accuracy of their reporting, not somebody whose payments from YouTube rely on rage clicks and clickbait.
Yeah, and you can often on the apps that you're on, those news outlets will have channels there too. So you can go check those in the same app and just see, are they showing these videos? Are they talking about the same thing? Did it really happen? That kind of thing.
But more importantly, literally, people's lives are on the line with this.
Yeah.
If you are spreading fake information, you're spreading propaganda for somebody. You don't even you may not even know for whom or why you're spreading this. Be really, 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 really careful, because all of us are the publisher now, and publishers have responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly. It's really important.
So, moving right along. By the way, this is our abyss section. This is a terribly, terribly scary story. But also this American life. Palantir CEO Alex Karp has said, well, pretty much out loud, he made a pretty shocking statement. That Palantir's AI technology will lessen the power of highly educated, often female voters who mostly vote Democrat, while increasing the power of working class men who tend not to vote Democrat. To quote Karp, this technology disrupts humanity's trained, largely Democratic voters and makes their economic power less, and increases the economic power of vocationally trained, working class, often male, working class voters, Karp said in a CNBC interview on Thursday. And so these disruptions are going to disrupt every aspect of our society. And to make this work, we have to come to an agreement of what it is we're going to do with the technology and how we're going to explain to people who are likely going to have less good and less interesting jobs. So Palantir is a company that we've been talking, Christine and I have been talking about pretty frequently on Webcology. It's run by Alex Karp, owned by Peter Thiel. And it's really kind of like the One Ring from Lord of the Rings when it comes to people tracking. All the software's out there. Palantir sort of brings all that data together and creates these monster profiles on individuals. Those profiles are used to, well, if you thought what Cambridge Analytica did with Facebook advertising back in 2016 was one thing. What Palantir can do with its information sets is quite another. So they're making it to literally to subvert American democracy.
I hear it's from the New Republic, and their summary, real quick, is it sounds like the long-term pitch to the GOP from the CEO, whose tech firm has already had numerous government contracts and is deeply embedded in the Pentagon. Karp's message is loud and clear. My technology will take political capital away from one of the greatest enemies, your greatest enemies, liberal women with degrees, and give you one of your favorite demographics to patronize, working class men, more political power to transfer to you. He's aligning his technology with both GOP political strategy and the larger male center culture war that the right has been waging for about a part of a decade now. I wish we could say like this technology is not political, but it is political because the people that run this technology are part of the technates and the dark, what they call the dark triad
Well,
or
hold on.
something.
Who's saying this technology isn't political? Because the CEO of the company is overtly saying
No, they're
this is
not.
political.
No, I'm saying we all often think that technologies are not political. It's how they're used. But in this case, the people running this technology, who develop this technology, who continue to grow this technology, have a political end in mind, and that is to subvert the current structure and in this case, trying to devalue women's roles in society and the workplace. I think that's their goal and aim. That's not just like Peter Thiel is part of this group, wrote an article, I wrote, I'm sorry, so wrote a paper in Stanford when he was at Stanford that said giving women the right to vote destroyed capitalism. And he gave that lecture on that quite frequently. So I'm just trying to say that the goal of this technology is to do things like this. It's not just to surveil or just to do this. It doesn't have a neutral framework in mind at all.
Indeed, this is all. I'm of the school that everything is political. People come up with these technologies for a reason, often to solve a problem that they themselves need solved. But once you intersect the areas of personal life and economics, you almost always stray into the political. Just I don't know, life amongst humans.
By the way, people should really see this guy speak because I don't know what he puts in his Cocoa Puffs,
But he's certainly cuckoo from
but
it.
he's certainly cuckoo from it. Yeah. His speeches, like I had it show up in my feed, and it's like, just watch this. And it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know what he's on it, but it's not just milk in those Cocoa Puffs.
Okay, he was featured prominently in the most recent 6-part mini season of South Park.
I didn't see that part.
You really should. Brilliantly skewered.
People really should look up the technates because it is an entire philosophy that's behind Musk and Thiel and Anderson and Karp and all these guys and the technologies they push and develop. And they do have an end goal. And really, basically, it's kind of like they're the kings and we're their feudal servants, but
They're
they
the
call it something
technoligarch.
else.
You know, the Russian oligarchs who people are so freaked out about, running the klepto state that is Russia. The American technologists have sort of done the same thing with the American government. How many American tax dollars are going into the technologarchs' pockets that weren't going into the technologarchs' pockets before? They purchased that election, and they're reaping the rewards for that purchase. That was the
And we
whole
should have to,
point.
and we have to say the things that we're saying are have come out of their own mouths. So this isn't like supposition.
Oh no! Yeah, indeed.
They talk. They follow Curtis Yarvin, who's leaving the country or has left because he thinks their goal failed. But these are things that they've said. These are things that they intend to do, and these are things that are the goals of their projects. So people really need to look it up and get educated on it because it affects them far more than they think.
Okay, let's step back into a almost more pleasant reality, at least with a group of people that we want to believe are trying to make the world a better place, even though the actions and the outcomes aren't necessarily, what these people were trying to create. And I still have a really hard time getting past seeing Google CEO standing up on the inauguration stage President Trump and Melania Trump. And I saw that stupid movie the other day.
You watched that movie?
I watched the whole thing start to
Oh
finish. I
my
can't. No, hold it. I didn't.
God.
I was writing. My wife Shauna was watching the movie. I was writing. I was working. I was trying to work anyway. And it was so anyway, but I did look up just in time to see the whole pantheon of technologarchs, including Sundar Pichai from Google, standing right front row at the where the cabinet usually stands
What the
for
heck
Trump's
are you doing?
inauguration. Anyway,
This is the head
Liz
of search at
Reed,
Google.
Google's head of search, did an interview, and Liz Reed was not on stage with Donald Trump, but her CEO was. And anyway, so Google developed the bedrocks for the LLM revolution before Sam Altman came along and released them to the public. I was explaining this the other day, giving Google or Sam Altman the role of Prometheus from Greek mythology. He gave fire to the people. Google invented that fire, or at least innovated that fire to the point where it was ready, almost ready for prime time, and then Sam Altman, needing a whole bunch of money, came along and gave it to the people.
Well, we talked to, we t just interject real quick. We talked about this before, but my favorite paper from Google Research was before all this came about was making dilettantes out of debutantes or vice versa, and that's the paper that he used to as the basis for ChatGPT. So it was a whole Google Research group that came up with the ideas that he used to create his product.
So I preface this story with that little bit of history because to say that Google wanted to introduce this stuff slower. It wanted to be more responsible with the outcomes of bringing AI to the people. I think it wanted to sort of train people for how AI might be used. And I think Google wanted to get itself ready for how AI might, for the impact AI might have on its indexing and crawling. But November 2022 happened, and we were all thrown into the AI revolution almost overnight. And since then, Google has had to move really quickly to protect its lead in search and to, well, basically run from behind in the what became an AI arms race.
Although we do believe that Google is now ahead in that AI arms race because Gemini 3 is considered the best model right now, and they're able to develop a chip that it uses half of, it doesn't, I'm sorry,
Well,
takes
yeah,
half of,
Google.
it costs about half as much as the chips do for NVIDIA.
Yeah, Google had a much better foundation and an infinitely better logistics. So when it comes to wars, including software cold wars, are run on really on logistics. And Google had the foundation and the ability. Anyway, it's probably Google's is one of the companies that's probably going to come out ahead. But well, Liz Reed did a head of search, did a long talk on or a long interview on AI overviews, AI's role in search, and where things are going to be going. And it's
And there's
available
a
on
video.
YouTube. There's a
Yeah,
video. It's up
video
on
too.
YouTube. The interview was with Alex Heath and Alice Hamburger. That's a great name for an interview, eh? This is Alice
It
Hamburger reporting from Google.
is.
Quick notes, and incidentally, these are notes that were compiled by Barry Schwartz in Roundtable.
Yeah. So starting off, search was never really static before. We know that if you in search, knowledge graphs, all those sort of things have changed a lot over the years. And Google is taking the responsibility for the pace of change very seriously. They don't want to change too quickly, but they do see opportunities. So labs opt in and slow rollout is common. If you're in Google Labs, you get to test these things early on. Google says people picked up on AI overviews quickly. AI agents will do a lot of work, but it won't be exclusive. Again, AI agents are very problematic, though, security-wise right now. Liz spoke about BERT Mum, Google Lens, and other AI products. People think AI just rolled out with ChatGPT, but BERT was actually the first large language model that Google developed. And that's actually where the predictive word that goes in a sentence came from. That research and the development of BERT was, that's what BERT stands for, basically, is that it can, doesn't need to understand and read the sentence left to right or right to left. It can actually just pick out a word and predict what word goes there. That's what was the basis for ChatGPT. Did you want to throw in some more of these, Jim?
Well, she's interested in how Gemini and Google Search are working together and in some cases not meshing together. And for people out there who are absolutely certain that Gemini and Google Search were going to become the same thing, apparently the head of search at Google doesn't share your certainty. She's not sure if Gemini and Search are going to converge. More people are turning to Gemini than ChatGPT. They're growing faster than ChatGPT. Not a mention in here of advertising content in Gemini results or in so I think that's something interesting and something that we have to watch a lot further. What are they going to do with advertising and what's going to be the determinant of what ads come up in these areas? She's worried about AI slop, but believes that AI can create better content. I don't know what that means for folks like me, who most of
Yeah,
my money now
that's
is
a
coming
weird
from
comment.
writing.
So they can create better content, it can create slop. So yeah, it's weird because it writes the same thing. So can't be both.
The thing that really that and this is the head of search saying this, so I'm going to take her view of this fairly seriously. People are switching to user-generated content, listening to more podcasts, rather than paying attention to what accredited journalists say. And I mentioned this last week. I've been covering search in this space for almost 20 years, and I don't think I'm a journalist. I'm a podcaster, and I used to be a blogger. I wrote stuff that ended up in the trade journals, but that doesn't make me a journalist. It just means I was telling you what I thought about search.
I think Google's made an error on this. People love independent journalists right now. They don't trust the big news sites right now because of all the people that have been buying them and owning them. But Aaron Parnas is massive. Like everyone knows who Aaron Parnas is, and he's an independent journalist, right? So I'm getting in my search results constantly user-generated content for serious things, medical topics, financial topics, right? And it's like, here's Reddit, here's a video. Here's, and I'm like going to page two to find a reputable company that can give me a real answer about something I really need to know. And so I think this may be a little bit of, we created it. So there's a lot more UGC in the top of the results. So people are watching it more because those are the results that you're getting. I don't know that. I think it's a little cart horse versus horse cart.
Well,
It's been going on for a while.
Google has said a couple of times that they're going to give users preferences, more preferences, especially in over recommendations made by the algorithm, especially in areas like discovery, which makes me think that they're going to be giving more preferences over what AI overviews and AI mode will return to any individual, depending on what the individual makes for their own settings. So maybe that'll change for you in the future. Maybe you, Christine, you can, set more or less what you want to see coming in. But even that kind of concerns me too, because a plurality of sources. And if
I
Google
don't want
starts
that.
letting us, there's some sources I don't want to read, I don't want to see, but I really should,
Yeah, I think
because I
it's
need to
actually
be,
a.
you know
I'm
what I
sorry, go
mean?
ahead.
No,
Yeah,
because
if
I
they
need
had
to
a.
be informed by that stuff, but I don't want to
Yeah.
see it because it drives me crazy.
But if they had a separate tab that's just like, here's your personalized tab, that'd be okay. But the fact that they funnel people harder and harder into only certain things that they read, I think is a detriment. Remember when we first, and internet first came out and there was no filters? Like you'd be on the internet all day, deep diving, like link after link, and you'd be like, oh, this is a weird site, right? And finally it ended up in conspiracy theory land. But at least you were discovering information and topics. And we've been in a filter bubble for many years, but they keep like 15 years, 20 years, but they keep narrowing that filter bubble and narrowing that filter bubble. And I when we do the stories for the show, if I only got the sites that I normally look at, I would miss like three quarters of the stories. Because I'd only be seeing certain sites, and those sites can't report on everything, right? So I do think it, I don't know if it's a positive. Mine is not personalized because, you know, we have clients, and I can't have personalized search and know what's going on with the client or test, you know, test my experiments and things like that. So I don't do that. I could see where it's a positive if you could separate it. I just think people should get an unfiltered feed. So.
So in the same interview, Liz Reed, I'm sorry, this is a different interview. This is from the Access podcast. Liz Reed was talking about how LLMs, large language models, talking about how they're evolving and what they can do for Google. One of the things that she touched on is when it comes to video and to audio podcasts. Large language models can understand the content in them. The large, you know, they can parse through and understand what's being said in the content, often as accurately as humans do, because the large language model doesn't stop paying attention. Humans often stop paying attention in the middle of a broadcast. The large language model doesn't. And so there, for Google, crawlers always had a problem going through audio
And video, yeah, first
and
30
video.
seconds was all they did.
So LLMs, this is a whole new world of information for them to unpack.
Yeah, and they can much better understand audio and video more than just the transcription gives them. So, one of the examples she gave was there's a longstanding gap in how search works for non-English speakers. For users in India speak Hindi and other languages, the web often lacks the information they need in their language. But previously, trying to translate all that content wasn't scalable, and large language models have changed that. A lot of large language models, when they're used for what they're supposed to be, is basically about scalability. It's taking something that was used to be a long process and makes it a much shorter process.
But check this out. India is approximately one-fifth to a quarter of the world's population.
Yeah, that's probably why
The
they
web
started there.
was not translatable into Hindi, the predominant language in India. Now there's a way for Hindi to be understood and accessible in search, in AI mode or in recommendations from AI overviews. When and then couple that with the level of technological sophistication in India, the web is about to change dramatically.
Yeah, they said like one, some of their examples were a test where they ran for speech to text accuracy. This was the KQED test, if you remember that, Jim. Wasn't high enough, so they've been working on that. Large language models have improved that, especially for foreign languages. And then also added context to like Google's audio overviews experience where experiment where it would summarize search results. So it's it's basically large language model everywhere. It's pretty much. And they also talked about personalization with preferred sources, which we just talked about in the previous one. But they want to surface from content from an outlet a user's pays for, but not be paywalled, because they can read paywalled content if you set up your site right. So they want to surface those more as well. We just talked about that though. But basically, yeah, go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry. You had just to say
No, it's
first.
okay. Here's the thing. If you want to use audio and video to communicate to your customers, but were afraid that Google just wasn't catching the message and passing it on to them, it will now.
Yes,
And so,
although, okay, go ahead.
well, if you don't have a website to direct people back to, good luck making the sale or whatever, but there's going to be a bunch more information being expressed through video, and that information is going to be making it into AI overviews and AI mode responses. And again, I think there's going to be a heck of a lot of marketing done in a rather multimodal way.
Yeah, I also just remember though, this is an expansion of what you're doing, not a replacement. So I see a lot of times like this will replace it with this. No, you're going to have more understanding of your audio and video, but you still need transcriptions,
Well,
right?
indeed,
This,
but
yeah,
you know what?
you need
Think
still
of
need
that.
summaries.
Think of that client you're working for. You have you're working with a personal injury lawyer who's made a bunch of
Medical
podcasts.
malpractice, not
I'm sorry,
personal
medical
injury.
malpractice. Who made a number of podcasts around her practice, around medical malpractice. And you know what we got to do? We got to go looking for some of that information in AI overviews just to see if anything is coming up. I'll bet
Yeah,
you. I bet
because
you.
there are some very specifics that possibly would. Yeah, I think it's great that it's going to go more into it. I just don't want people to think that they can relax on the traditional stuff.
Well, a lot of that
Transcriptions
traditional stuff
don't
is
really
going to
matter.
help you do better. Because remember,
Yes.
everyone's going to be doing this. So, what makes you a little bit better?
Yes, making sure you do all the traditional stuff too.
There
Yeah.
you go, right?
Yeah, it's expansion, not a replacement.
Okay, now I bet you a bunch of people are feeling this. And I know a couple of people I'm working with, you can just see the burnout happening.
Can I say something just real quick before you start on this one
Yeah,
though?
sure.
Because you hit this on the nose in one of our last 2 weeks, I think it was, podcast, and nobody was really talking about it yet. And then I saw a paper from Harvard or MIT, one of those, that said basically what you did here, which was that you can, and we had an article on it too, but after that. But it's like you can do more work because you have the large language model, which they don't hire more people to help you do, which
Oh,
means,
is this the brain fry story? Let me tell
yeah, it's
people
on
what the
there.
story is first.
Oh, you
Shoot.
just did. You
I
just
didn't
did.
know
Sorry.
it. I
Sorry.
didn't know
I
it.
thought you did. Okay.
Oh.
I read the story, so I probably thought it was already enough. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Well, so okay, I'm working with people who are using AI for almost everything. Okay, so they're getting more stuff done faster, which means they can get more stuff done, which means, you got a couple spare hours. Why don't you do some more stuff? Humans were made to accomplish tasks. And when you get that task accomplished, you feel really good because now you get to chill out a little bit, right? But now some guy's coming along saying, "Hey, I'm paying for you. I'm not paying for you to sit here looking at your phone. I'm paying for you to work." And you just got a whole bunch more work done. Like your productivity has gone up 10 times, and they want you to do more work. And it's really hurting people's brains. In fact, the psychological term for it, according to the a Harvard Business Review article about research done at Boston Consulting Group and the University of California, Riverside, they came up with the highly scientific term AI brain fry.
Sounds like,
Marketing workers were
yeah,
hit
I've heard
hardest
of
at 26%.
that. Which makes total sense because it's the one industry where this probably affects almost everything you do, having to understand it, like for ads, understanding it for content, understanding it for search, understanding it for algorithms. Like there's probably no area of a marketer's life that AI is not touching it.
Well, moreover, I think we have people who are legitimately afraid of not keeping up. And so they have to work two or three times as hard. Run faster, and they will never, ever, ever keep up.
Yeah, and a lot of companies are making people use the AI too. They're forcing it. Like, you can't keep your job if you're not using it. Workers
Which
just
means
got,
you can do more in a day.
marketing workers, so this is Search Engine Journal. Marketing workers reported the highest brain fry rate at 25%, HR people at 19%, operations at 17%, engineering software 17%, and it goes down from there. Legal compliance was the lowest at 5%, which makes sense because they're not using a lot of this. Workers described a buzzing feeling, mental fog, and slower decision making. Many said they had to physically step away from their computers to reset. Finance director quoted in the study said, "I have been back and forth with AI, reframing ideas, synthesizing data, forming and organizing the flow of pillars and work. I couldn't even comprehend if what I created made sense. Just couldn't do anything else and had to revisit the next day when I could think." So the brain does, you know what the brain works best for new ideas and all in summarizing in your own brain? You know when it works best? When it's bored. That's why you have aha moments in the shower, when you're out for a walk, when you're doing the dishes. There's research on this. This isn't like me saying, there's actually studies on this. And so someone wrote a whole book about it. So when your brain is bored, it has time and energy to synthesize all the information it's trying to sort through. And then it'll come up with that aha moment. That's why the aha moment doesn't come when you're sitting at your desk for 8 hours straight, getting mental fog and buzzy brain, right? So to anyone who's running companies, they need to be aware that just giving people AI to do supposedly more productivity, but we know from other research we've covered that among, I think they studied 7,000 companies, it was only a 3% increase in actual productivity. So you can actually fry out your workers, and you know who leaves first when you fry out your workers? Your most talented workers, because they have opportunities and they have options. So,
Moreover, they've been the most productive, and you've been probably throwing more weight on their shoulders.
yeah, and you know, and I want to put this from before AI existed. When I was at a company when I was younger, I was taught from my family, you work hard, you work hours, you do it till it's done, right? We didn't have enough people, so I was working like 60, I was salaried, right? I was working 60 hours, 70 hours a week on our projects. And finally, my boss came to me one day. He goes, "I want you to stop working late. I want you to stop working over 40 hours. I want you to stop doing extra work." And I'm like, "What? What? Like, I thought I was being a good employee." He goes, "I need more people. I can't get a head count if you're doing the work of two people or three people." He's like, "So I need you to stop doing that." And I was so relieved because I thought I was supposed to be doing that, right? And I think that's the same feeling people have now, but the boss isn't looking to add people. They're looking to some.
They're looking to exploit that. If they can exploit
Yes,
it, they will.
exactly. So this was a study of 1,488 full-time US-based workers, just about half and half male and female, and 58% individual contributors, 41% leaders. And it was a hard, it was the full
Interesting.
details in the Harvard Business Review.
And this is the crap I was talking about at the beginning of the show. Like, this is ultimately the stuff that we're working to help create and perfect and people do better with. And normalize and all that sort of stuff. Well, every day I wake up and I feel like I'm going to work to help normalize dystopia. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is. And it's not that they can't use AI in companies, but you can't use it if you want to keep your people from burning out to add to their workload and not give them time to, take breaks and do things that they need to do. And no one should force their workers to use it unless it's like, part of a government contract where you have to use it or something like that, because it may not be someone's flow. It may not work with their brain. They may not find it helpful. And then you're forcing your people into burnout even faster. So it should be available as a tool, but not forced.
Again, as a writer, AI is incredibly useful for me. It gives me content outlines. It gives me long-term calendars. It keeps track of facts. Everything has to be double-checked. But I have to often write in a number of different voices, and to do that, you have to know AI helps me keep cultural calendars. And what these different cultural things mean. And again, if you're writing in different voices, you somehow have to know this. Is it perfect? God, no. But it does make my work faster. But if you lean on it and depend on it and it becomes the everything, I think you're gonna drive yourself nuts.
Yeah, and I'm the opposite. I don't have time to check it, so I don't really use it a whole lot.
Well, I had to check
So.
that stuff. I had to check that stuff before anyway. It's just a different means of getting the information. I get the information faster, but it takes me a bit longer to check the different the individual points. But I get all of those the bulk of those points so much faster.
And I see, and this is where workflow can differ between people who work, right? So that's great, and it works for you. What I'm trying to say, nothing negative about you doing that. For me, I like to do the research because it leads me to other ideas, which leads me to other ideas, which leads me to other things I didn't know about, which leads me to other sources I wasn't familiar with. And then I
Yeah.
also don't have to check it for accuracy when it writes it. So for me, the work I do, which is different than your work, is it's not as helpful. So I don't find it as helpful. So I don't use it that often. I use it sometimes, but just not that often. So like I use it more like if I'm asked to respond to something and I know all the answers to it, but I don't really want to sit there and write out all the framework, and it's not important. It's like an email or something. Then I'll do it, or sometimes I'll do it to make sure I didn't miss an idea, but I just don't use it the same way, but it's okay. Everyone can have their own ways of using it. But the problem is a lot of companies are forcing people to use it in a certain one way kind of deal, and not everybody's brains work the same way or jobs work the same way.
Okay, so next story, and I want you to hear this like a detective novel, okay? The agent mapped the attack surface and found the API documentation publicly exposed. Over 200 endpoints fully documented. Most required authentication. 22 didn't. One of those unprotected endpoints wrote the user queries to the database. The values were safely parametered, but the JSON keys, the file names, were concentrated directly into SQL, and you got yourself a prompt injection attack.
Yeah, and this wasn't some small company that doesn't have like a security team. This was McKinsey.
And so it probably affected some large-scale projects. McKinsey's
Yeah,
a
now this.
big consulting firm, like not a small, like a big consulting firm.
Yeah, it 46, what was inside that they were got access to? 46.5 million chat messages, 728,000 files, 57,000 user accounts, 384,000 AI assistants, and 94,000 workplaces. The full organizational structure of how the firm uses AI internally from one unsecured endpoint, which is what's making people with security jobs pull their hair out these days.
Now, luckily, this was actually a security job. The people who did this
Yes.
attack wrote it up from front to finish. This is how we did it, what we did, why we did it, and why, to quote them, this is devastating.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing this talk at Black Hat this year or DEF CON. I'm sure it will be there.
So, by
The
the way,
agent,
we're not. Oh, sorry.
I was just saying, the agent didn't stop at SQL either. It also found system prompts and AI model configurations, 3.68 million RAG document chunks, 1.1 million files, and 217,000 agent messages and cross-user data access. Basically, it had internal access to everything that they have, and McKinsey has all the sensitive data on companies from around the world. So it had someone actually gotten in there, and this hadn't just been, as Jim said, a test that they were doing. This could have been massive. This could be massively damaging because they have 43,000 consultants relying on this internal AI system for their work. The internal AI system is called Lily.
By the way, if they were messing with 3.8 million RAG document chunks, they were literally messing with the with how the AI tags reality.
Yes, exactly. And so this is, it was CodeWall, was the ones who did it. It's the autonomous offensive security platform behind the research. But it's pretty fascinating. And this is why I tell people all the time on our show, when you're using AI agents, to use them in an isolated situation, because the massive company and they got to everything. Can you imagine on your like browser and your own computer? Like how easy it might be. So you want to definitely use agents in isolated environments.
I'm working with
Fascinating
a
study.
with a with a very small medical clinic in North Toronto, and the level of privacy concern in this tiny little medical practice is through the roof. McKinsey works with nation states.
Yes. Yeah. And oh, sorry.
I'm sorry, just terrifying. How easy it was for Code Wall to do this.
Because when we're moving to our next story was a real situation with AI agents. And I don't know if you saw this, Jim, because I'm on social a lot during the day, that there was like this thing on the socials, which is like Amazon's basically called a code red meeting. Like all everybody needs to get in there. Apparently, their AI agents who are vibe coding have been doing not a great job.
Well, didn't Amazon go down for several minutes early in the week?
That's one of them. Also, they were AWS was attacked in the Iran situation, so one of their data centers did go down. It was bombed, but this is not that. So also, this could be what you're talking about. I don't know the result, what caused that outage, but they did have outages, which is what caused this meeting. And so David Treadwell is a top executive overseeing the technical foundations of Amazon's website. This is from CNBC, and he called a this week. What did he call? Some employees at this company's This Week in Storage Tech, a twist meeting would be a deep dive of some of the issues that got us here. And they were all called to it. It was like I said, a code red, because their vibe coding wasn't doing the job that it was supposed to do, and it was responsible for these outages. And so they were mandating that all the developers and security people use this tool, right? But it wasn't doing the job that it was supposed to be doing.
Apparently, there's been a quote unquote trend of incidents since the third
Yes.
quarter. I'm assuming third quarter of last
Yeah.
year. Amazon, now that people are developing their own agents to interact with Amazon's system, Amazon. Again, there's been this string, a trend of incidents, whatever that might mean, involving Gen AI tools. Amazon clearly wasn't prepared for the pace of development.
Well,
That's
and a
what I
lot
the
of
positive.
the
That's what's happening here. It's everything is happening so fast. They just weren't ready for it.
And a lot of it's their own internal assistant tool, their vibe coding tool. So the meeting came after Amazon's store online store malfunctioned for some users last week. For roughly 6 hours on Thursday, website and app users were unable to check out, access account information, or view product prices. And as I said in the statement, there are issues related to software code deployment. They had four in the last week for these issues, by the way. So Amazon and its hyperscale rivals are ramping up spending on infrastructure we were just talking about, and demand for intelligence services, which require increasing amounts of computer power. So just to keep up, they fired a lot of the people they fired at Amazon wasn't because they were being replaced by AI, but it was to pay for the AI. So Treadwell acknowledged that the best practices and safeguards around generative AI usage have not been fully established yet, and Amazon plans to reinforce various safeguards to prevent further issues. And this
Check out
isn't.
one of these safeguards. And this is like kind of like the nuclear option when it comes to safeguards. Amazon went to court. A federal judge has granted Amazon a preliminary injunction against Perplexity AI to stop Comet browser agents from accessing password protected Amazon accounts and systems. Now, it's okay to make your Perplexity AI agent do stuff for you, but doing that violates Amazon's terms and services. You're not allowed to have an autonomous agent act on your behalf or access your account according to Amazon's terms and services. And because it's written in their terms and services, the Ninth Circuit Court has granted a 7-day administrative the court I'm sorry the court denied Perplexity requests for a 7-day administrative stay and granted a preliminary injunction.
And here's
So right now Perplexity can't go in.
it says, so the point of law in this was Amazon sued Perplexity in November, alleging the startup committed computer fraud. Have you heard of computer fraud before? I have not. Like the computer actually committed fraud, not the person.
Yep, and it
And
did because they
it
wrote it down.
did.
They said you can't do this.
And they were disguising Comet as a standard Chrome browser and refusing to identify it as an AI agent while making purchases. So they're hiding the agent was making the purchases instead of a human. So the courts ruled that they have strong evidence that Perplexity, through its Comet browser, accessed Amazon user accounts with the user's permission, but without authorization by Amazon.
And
So,
Amazon will never grant that authorization because it says so very clearly you can't do this.
yeah, because that opens, it opens up a whole another problem for them because agents that they have are having problems with. Can you imagine if you added other people's agents to your
Well, that's the
shopping?
whole thing. I mean,
Yeah.
I think Amazon wants this to happen. They really, really, really want computers to buy stuff off them on behalf of consumers. So that means more stuff's going to get bought off them. What they don't want is a lot of fraud. And this is wide open for fraud. And the vibe-coded agentic revolution is happening so quickly. We're talking a matter of months. There's no way that Amazon is prepared to fend off all the and could you imagine the variety of code that's going to be coming at them?
Oh no, because
The variety of security concerns that are be coming at them? There's no way they're prepared to deal with this.
no, actually the whole security industry isn't prepared because now the AI can make the attack change per attack. So as we said, LLMs are great for scale, right? So there's a big problem right now where the agent changes the attack surface as it goes to the next one or comes back at you. So you fix that part, but it finds another one. And it
So,
continually changes it to make sure that you can't defend against it. So it's
you got to wonder why isn't Google facing this problem? Google is creating the Universal Commerce Protocol.
well, we don't know yet because it hasn't been out there, right? And I think Sundar is very willing to not make that a well-known factor until it becomes a problem. Just
Well, I
knowing
can
how Sundar.
guarantee you that the moment it's introduced in the wild, somebody will find a way to make it a
Oh, yeah.
problem.
Yeah, but I think Sundar doesn't address things until after they become the problem. And by the way, there's addition. This is from Search Engine. Is this Roundtable? Yeah, Search Engine Journal. That this also is a basis for other types of agents from not being able to access Amazon. So Amazon and Perplexity, OpenAI, ChatGPT all launched checkout features this year. Google, Microsoft, and Shopify are building and enabling agentic commerce tools. But all those products will have to interact with these platforms and may not want them there. And as we just said, primarily probably for security concerns. As you just mentioned, like fraud could be so substantial, right? So the court's ruling here, when they finally get it all, settled out, is going to probably be the basis for others as well. So it's going to be interesting to see because everyone's like got this big agent. The new layer of the internet. I see the stories every day, but what if people that run the companies don't want that new layer unless it's under very specific protocols? So we'll see what happens. But this could change the whole idea of agents, this one case, because the agent was disguising itself. And we already know agents disguise themselves. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, so moving along to another AI-ish story. This one's kind of neat. Ben Affleck has just sold Netflix his AI startup. The AI startup is called Interpositive, and it appears to use AI to enhance films, to maybe correct errors in post-production. Say they're filming a desert scene in the 1800s and an airplane happens to fly overhead. This AI would help you edit out stuff like that, or stupid stuff gets out of sync, vocal gets out of sync with the filming of the actor. This helps you fix this. The people who work on movies, on the other, have a problem with this, given that it'll take a lot of human hands out of post-production work. Netflix has bought this company off of Affleck for something less than $600 million. That's according to
Bloomberg.
MSN.com, at any rate. So yeah, there you go. I guess they didn't get they didn't get HBO, so they got AI instead.
Yeah, and one important piece about this technology, you cannot use it to create a film. You can only use it for the edit, which does definitely displace post-production work, but in the same time, it's not trying to take over the movie making industry.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. Actually, I don't see this as a big terrible thing. And it's funny
No.
because I know people who do post-production work. But this, I think this is more inevitable than anything else.
Yeah, and it's something that can fuel some of the needs in Hollywood and maybe back off a little bit of the replacing humans with AI stuff. So we'll see.
Okay, this is a difficult one.
It's a weird story. It just came out this
Oh,
week.
this one makes me really angry, actually.
Yeah,
So
it's
Grammarly
weird.
has a new feature using AI to simulate editorial feedback from noted authors. Examples used are Stephen King, the late Carl Sagan, or tech journalist and friend of the former friend of the search industry, Kara Swisher. I'm sure she still likes the search industry, but she actually used to be involved. Kara Swisher used to come to our conferences, years and years
Did
and
she
years ago.
really? How did I miss
Absolutely.
that? I follow her all the
This
time
was,
now, but I never knew that. Maybe because
yeah,
I started in 2005.
you weren't hanging out getting drunk in the press room. You had to
Oh,
be getting
true.
drunk in the press room with the rest of us, with the rest of us
True, true.
creeps. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, so Grammarly has this edit expert review, a critique of your work from quote unquote novelist Stephen King, scientist Carl Sagan, or tech journalist Carol Swisher. Thing is, it's not them. It's an AI that was trained on their work. And one of the people who was involved, who was used for training, a journalist, Julia Angwin, has filed a class action against Superhuman, the parent company that owns Grammarly, saying that the company has violated her privacy and publicity rights. It's impersonating her and other writers. And because it's a class action, other writers are able to join Angwin in her case.
Okay. By the way, they've pulled it since this started. But imagine your professor sharpening your essay, your sales leader reshaping a customer pitch, a thoughtful critic challenging your arguments, or a leading expert evaluating your purpose, they wrote from Grammarly. For experts, this has a chance to build that same ubiquitous bond with users. What are they talking about? It's predictive text. It's not the user. They're not actually editing your stuff. They probably just use the style of that person's writing to write the critique, which isn't actually an analysis of anything, unless they're using like other programs to analyze like grammar or something like that. But they're not actually editors. Like you and I both have had editors. I appreciate a good editor more than life itself when I'm writing for people, but maybe not more than life, but close to that.
Wow.
This isn't actually an editor. So I don't understand what Grammarly was trying to do here. Like Grammarly is a good product. They have a good reputation. Why would you add this?
Grammarly has been replacing humans with AI for over a year now. They replaced a number of their language tutors
Oh, that's true.
with
Yeah.
and they've been again replacing a lot of their English tutors or I'm sorry, grammar tutors with AI. So I think
It's just a
again,
weird
what do we
ad.
expect them to do?
It's so weird. It's just a weird thing to add without permission, and you knew that people would say something about it, so maybe they thought it'd be good publicity. I don't know. I just found it weird.
I think they were seeing what they could get away with, and they got called on this one. As you said, they appear to be pulling back on it, but I bet you it
Yeah.
comes back in a new form a couple months from
As
now.
long as they don't lose the court case, yeah. But that court case is class action, so they may their lawyers may
Oh,
apply
sorry, yeah, a
changes.
couple of years from now. You're right, it's a class action. This will take a while.
Yeah, it'll take a while. So,
Okay,
I
so
know you
starting in
hate
April.
covering. Yeah, I know
I
you hate
hate X. I
covering.
hate Elon Musk. I
I
hate
know,
X.
but people need to know it exists.
Well, of
So,
course I do. I'm not
not to use
but
it.
just because I dislike it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I'm
Yes,
just
exactly.
not going to use this platform because
No.
I don't like hanging out with Nazis. And I don't see anything redeemable at X right now, no matter whether it's the public square or not. If the public square is polluted with Nazis, avoid the public square. But Elon Musk is going to launch a new payment platform called X Money. It's going to be released in beta to select users in April. This was the a partnership between Visa and X that was announced over a year ago when former CEO Linda Yakarenko referred to the platform as the everything app. WeChat has a similar thing, which has, payments and stuff all in one app. But let's remember what the People's Republic uses WeChat for. So
Might
anyway,
want to tell people they may not be aware.
WeChat is used as much a means of control of individuals in China as it is a social network. But then
Yeah.
again, many could say the same thing about Instagram in North America. It's just a lot more subtle. Which this is why, we want to ban young people from using social, or countries are moving to ban young people from using social media because of the influences it has over them. WeChat is just a lot more overt about it.
Yeah, well,
Seriously.
it goes
I
to
mean, it's
yeah,
the
but it
same
goes to your
game.
no, but yeah, but it goes to your social score, which can prevent you from traveling or owning a house or all those other things. So it's not quite the same.
Pretty well, I'm tracing people's, making the, credit score in North America does functionally much of the same thing, although you are still able to take the subway.
And also, my social media posts don't count into my credit score.
You sure?
Anyway. Yes, I'm positive.
You
But
sure
on
about that
here,
these days? Are you really sure about that?
yeah, I'm really sure about that.
Okay.
It's called X Money. It's an offshoot of the platform X, obviously. I don't know why there's a need for it. It's like we have PayPal, we have Venmo, we have Zelle, we have Cash App. These are all
The
peer-to-peer transaction apps.
need for it is to take control from the states and state bank and to give it to the technoligarchs. That's why there's a need
No,
for
I
it. The
no. I'm
technoligarchs need more money.
saying I don't know why there's a need for it in the market. You
Because the
know.
technoligarchs need more money.
Yeah, but that's not a need of the market. The market is not needing that. So the PayPal, I don't use PayPal much anymore at all because their policies are so draconian. Venmo and Zelle and Cash App are what most everybody uses now, have like accounts for, and they all serve the purpose of peer-to-peer transactions. I would not trust Musk with anything financial. Oh my gosh. But I don't really understand. I think when they came up with the product, it was like 2 years ago before his Nazi salute and removing USAID, and 700,000 people have died because of that and all the other things he's done. I just think he's may think he's more relevant than he is. I mean, sure, the Nazis will probably, use this platform, but I don't see why anybody else would. I just, even from just the point of view of he's not a responsible person. His companies don't act responsibly. So why would you trust your money with a company that is known not to act responsibly? So, and Musk himself, according to some states, and I forget which state this is from, but they have said he has engaged in a pattern of reckless conduct in both business and government, has put consumers at risk, and demonstrated a lack of character and general fitness. This is from New York. So they're going to ban it. So many of the states are going to ban it. So you wouldn't even be able, like, if I'm in Nevada and someone's in, another state, and my state may say no, then we can't even use it anyway. So it's just a weird launch for him at this point, I think.
Okay.
And you're right, they want more money, but yeah, I just
It's
don't think
all
it's good.
about making them more money.
Yeah.
Okay, it's always about making them more money. It's just, so
Yeah.
if you're worrying about or using ChatGPT Health, you should be aware that in 51.6% of emergency cases, when compared to the responses of three actual physicians who reviewed the same scenarios, 51.6% of the time, ChatGPT under-triaged the cases put in front of it. Instead of recommending a patient go to the emergency room, the bot would recommend, say, I don't know, waiting 24 to 48 hours before contacting a doctor. This could be emergencies and with stuff including, oh, I don't know, diabetic ketosis, respiratory failure, which incidentally will kill you if you leave it untreated.
Yeah.
So will diabetic ketosis. Anyone with training would say get thee to an emergency department because that's where you got to be when these things happen. But ChatGPT isn't anyone with medical training; it's ChatGPT.
Yeah, and it's, as we know, Ernie is up to 48% of the time. Yeah, it can, because the research showed like ChatGPT could pass medical exams. Well, of course they can't, because they study on the medical exam and know the answers, right? But this is the kind of thing where in practice it's just not good. Like 51% of the people, they were, when we say emergent, and when Jim was talking about this part, they mean people that if they didn't go to the emergency room within 24 to 48 hours would die. That's what they tested on. 51% of the time it was wrong. Do not use GPTs for important things. It's actually in the actual like warnings on the sites themselves. They say don't use this for important things. It may be wrong. So don't use it for important things. Also, don't give your health information to a GPT.
Oddly enough, in an NBC News survey, a majority of registered American voters, 57%, say they believe the risk of AI outweigh its benefits. I wonder why. Compared with 34% who said the opposite.
And
Interestingly, voters who view AI negatively don't believe that either Democrats or Republicans are doing a good job of handling policy relating to AI.
only 26% of voters had a positive feeling about AI, which may also be at the basis of some of the other things that we reported on, where usage has gone down, not up, in a lot of areas. Not all areas, some areas it's up, but in a lot of areas it's down. So I did find this interesting. It was so many people. Because I know people use it, and personally, I know friends that use it quite frequently that are not in tech. But the most negative views are coming from voters 18 to 34.
Well, I think it's the people who are being directly affected by not being able to get entry-level positions because of AI.
Yeah, but it is
I'd feel bad
interesting.
about it too.
Before that even happened, I talked to people when I was in groups with a large number of people under like 30. About social and AI and things like that. And they have very negative views on all of it, which is going to be a bad thing for these AI companies because the next generation usually rejects the tech of the generations in front of it. But in this case, this is a trillion-dollar investment,
No, I don't. Oh,
right?
here's the thing. I don't think the next generation is going to reject the tech. I think they'll just find different ways to use it.
Possibly. But if you have 51% already that don't, and only 26% positive, 18% in the 18 to 24. That's a big hill to overcome.
You know, most people I know don't like paying taxes. You know what I mean? But it's still in most people I know don't like having to do most of the necessities of life, to be honest. Adulting is hard. And I'm pretty sure that's how this is gonna end out. This is because I don't see them taking the tool away. If it can improve productivity, regardless of the cost, it's just we live in a very, very ugly timeline.
Oh, we'll see what happens. But
Okay, so here's a neat one that might sort
this is
of
a weird
shed light
one.
on where the timeline's going.
This is
Meta bought
weird.
Moltbook, and listeners might remember Moltbook was the social network for AI agents that is probably not run as much by AI agents as it appears. It's a great deal of human intervention here. But it is a social network for AIs to chat with each other. And all sorts of wild stuff happened in Moltbook for like the what 1 week it existed in the wild. Facebook just bought Moltbook. And people at TechCrunch are suggesting that points to an agentic future in Facebook.
It's just weird because we all know from the reporting we've done, you and I, Jim, that not only did it like run amok, but also it committed like nefarious code to GitHub. It, you know, created like so many opportunities for hacking and being hacked. And I don't understand the purpose of this. I really don't. Also, oddly, the guy who created this also created Claude, which became Moltbook, which became OpenClaw. What is that? And one of these is owned now by OpenAI, and he works for them. And now this works. This is for Meta, but he doesn't work for them. The guy who created this network, because it's not, it's an environment. It's not like a large language model. But But it's just bizarre because it's, I don't know, it's just really weird. Like it's one product that evolved into another product. The other product went to OpenAI and him, he's got a job there. And this is Meta's bought it. So
I think for Meta, let's assume that Meta's not going to make Moltbook into anything public facing.
oh, I think it
Could you
would because
imagine
Moltbook
the
was a
research
social
value?
network.
Could you imagine the research value of all these chatbots, all these agents talking to each other or communicating with each other? What Meta's going to learn about how these things relate to each other? How they can build concepts on each other. Meta's going to learn a lot just with the data set it gets from the week that Moltbook existed as an open network. I don't know what they can do with it, but
Yeah, because it
I
was,
don't have a great imagination anymore.
first of all, it was vibe coded, and second of all, it was insecure. So humans made a lot of those posts on the social
Well, yeah, there
network
was a
for
great deal of
bots.
human intervention there. I think people
Yeah.
have I'm not going to say proven it, but the supposition is very strong.
Yeah, I just think it's a very weird purchase. We'll have to follow what they do with it because it's just, and you're right, they probably could learn a lot from it, but it sounds like they're also going to make it human facing. Which, oh my, because it says Facebook once built the friend graph, a network defined by social connections between people where every individual is a node. An agentic web could benefit from an agent graph, a system that maps out how various agents are connected and
Which
what
that
actions
makes
they can take.
perfect sense for research. That's where it was coming from, actually, when I
Yeah.
said that.
No, I agree. I just say that they also talk about it being public facing, and I don't know how that would work because definitely people don't want a bunch of AI bot comments in their comments. So I don't know, we'll see. But
Any
yeah,
more
you're
than
right.
they already got,
Right,
no
LinkedIn is
doubt.
terrible for that. Yeah, LinkedIn is really bad for them.
Okay, you know what? This is a great segue into the next story, actually, because Meta is adding new scam protections to Facebook, WhatsApp, and Messenger. They knocked out 150,000 accounts associated with the scam center following this year's very badly named Joint Disruption Week. Why would you want to disrupt a joint? Joints are wonderful.
You know what's so weird about this? I mean, I know what this is about. Because we know that Facebook was not addressing $6 billion a year in scams because they like the money,
Well, yeah.
right? Yeah. But now all of a sudden we see regular news reports about them going after scams. They got a lot of public notice for that. They also got congressional notice for that. So
Well,
my guess is.
you see, Christina, it's an election year, and they have to say this sort of thing in the beginning of an election year. Not that they're actually going to pay any attention to it towards the end of the election year, but at the beginning, they really just got to say this stuff. I've
Yeah, it
noticed
does
this
too.
happen every time.
Yeah, it does too. There are some good features here, though. So the new warnings will let users know when they send or receive a request from an account that shows signs of suspicious activity. So it actually comes up with a whole, overlay over what you're doing and lets you know, hey, this might be suspicious. Do you really want to keep talking to this person? It'll also include notes on things of how long the account has been active, where it's based, whether there are any mutual connections. You can kind of see that in messages, but you don't see it really in Facebook. WhatsApp, Meta at, are added device linking warnings, which will prompt users to think twice about approving a link request. And explain on Meta, sometimes scammers ask users to enter their phone number followed by a device linking code on WhatsApp. They also may try to trick people into scanning a QR code under false pretenses, which would then link to the scammer's device. So they're going to let people know that from behavioral signals. And these are full. This is on social media today if anyone wants to read the story, because they show you the screenshots of exactly how it's going to look. So it's pretty in your face to let you know that this is a thing. Joint Disruption Week is a weird name for it, but it is the first event of this type and was in last November, December. So that one led to the removal of 59,000 accounts, and as you said, now 150,000 accounts. The event also led to 21 arrests made by the Royal Thai Police. So.
Okay.
That's like a good thing. That's positive for Meta. They've had a lot of negatives in the last year, so it's good to see them doing something different for a change.
This is a cool story. I love this idea. So, WordPress is going to let you design your website on your web, on your computer, run entirely in your web browser, sitting on your hard drive or whatever passes a reasonable facsimile for your hard drive. The new service, mywordpress.net. It's going to let you basically set up and begin publishing without setting up a hosting plan or nothing like that. The one thing, your website will not be accessible from the web. You can access the web, But like you can have a link that will work unidirectionally going out, but you can't have nothing coming into your website. That's kind of cool. And then, when your website's done and designed and you've got it the way you like it, then you can upload it to the web host. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's really cool. So, say you were working for, okay, so at the beginning of the year, I had a job
Oh, you can
for a
move it.
charity group. Okay, and this charity group doesn't have a lot of money. I did the job mostly just at cost. And the project was delayed for 1 month because it took them a while to literally to raise the money for hosting. So I had to wait a
Wow.
month before I can get into it. I could have designed the site, had it sitting on my hard drive, and then the moment they had the hosting set up, just uploaded it. Done, done, bang, boom.
Yeah, you
So
will
there's
have
an
to move
example
it.
of when that would have been useful for, as an example.
That's true. The other thing I'd want to see is how well it transfers from this to an actual WordPress host. Like, are you transferring this to WordPress host, or do you have to
You're
transfer it
making it within
into
the,
WordPress?
well, you're making it within the WordPress framework, so I'd imagine the whole theme structure would apply. You'd have to, get your theme, download the right theme, build within that theme. You could probably bring down various plugins, say like Elementor is an environment you could build in or something. You could probably even get that all working and buy your accounts with it. The thing is, maybe those wouldn't work because I'm not quite sure how it would check in on. But then you know what? Those all sit at the account level, not at the web hosting level.
I guess the thing I don't understand about it, and I just have to read more about it, I think, and see like what they've said about the use case, is if I put a WordPress site together and just leave it on non-indexed, it's a private environment, and I can do it, and then I can make it published, and then it's all there. I don't have to transfer it anywhere. So I'm not sure I understand why it's a necessary thing. I thought originally when I first read this, it was just going to be like you could write stuff in mywordpress.net and it would go to your website, which would be really cool because then you don't have to give permissions to people. You don't necessarily want to have permissions. But I don't really understand. I guess you don't have to pay for a domain, and the hosting is really the only part about it, but there's free hosts too.
You
So.
can also set up a basically a private web page on your computer that's accessible only to you. Now,
Yeah,
I know
but
you
that's
can do that.
hard.
You can do that on a host. You can do that for sure.
You
But
can do it on a bunch of different, yeah, different products that already exist. So
this one
just
lets
that.
you do it off your hard drive.
Yeah, just interesting. I don't really see the use case for it, but maybe once I give it some thought, I'll see it better.
Okay. I haven't seen this yet. This is a new story. Yahoo. MyScout is not available in Canada, only available to American users. But Yahoo has introduced a personalized homepage for Scout AI, quote unquote, answer engine, basically making Yahoo's new AI engine a daily dashboard for people. It's called MyScout, and it was released in beta today.
It kind of seems like Yahoo homepage, like it always was, but you can just, I don't know, what's sometimes when I see an AI solution to something, I'm like, but they already did this, and why are we doing it with AI now? So, because you could customize your Yahoo page for many years. I hadn't used it in a long time. I used the mail, but I don't use the homepage. But like back in 2008, you could customize your homepage. I guess part of it's the beta AI answer engine that comes with it. So you can ask questions about things on the homepage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know a lot of my answers, my comments there are like, why? Sorry. I'm just like,
It's going to
why
let you trick out
don't
your homepage with information from mail, news, sports, finance, games.
But you could do that in 2004 when
Yeah,
I signed
but
up for the account.
this is on MyScout, Christine. You couldn't do it on MyScout. This is new.
That's a problem with a lot of the AI stuff I see that comes out. I'm like, but somebody already does it and does it better, and it doesn't require use of very expensive AI. So why are we doing it with AI? I don't know. But
Yeah,
maybe there's a reason. I just don't understand.
doesn't Sugar Ray run that team?
I don't know if she still does. She did it one time.
Yeah, you better be careful. Yeah, maybe you're in a dark alley or something. Okay. Windows 11's taskbar has an internet speed tool test tool, which is basically a shortcut to Bing.com. There you go.
I thought of this though, right?
Yeah.
We do these stories periodically where Microsoft is trying to get people to go to Bing like in some weird way. Why not just invest in a proper ad campaign to get people to use it? Because actually, and a lot of things about Bing now are better than Google.
Well,
And that's
you
not
know
always
what?
in the case fast.
Hey, Bing, do what Yahoo would do. Just put the speed tester on your homepage. That's what Yahoo would
It's
do.
true. But it's funny because we've read about a lot of these, you know, like where they disguised like the logo and they made it look like Google, but it wasn't, things like that. And it's just like, just do an ad campaign. That's how, you know, that's how it works. It could be an influencer campaign on social media or something. But because I use Bing for the show every week now. I don't use Google because it's much better for news than Google is at this time.
Well, you'd be very happy to know then that the Bing video creator is powered by OpenAI's Soros 2. You got to get something for your investment, don't you? That's interesting. Google is using years and years and years of news reports and the predictive technology of Gemini to predict when there will be a flash flood. It's a very cool thing. Their project is called Ground Source. It's the code name for it. And this is, reminds me a lot of when Google was able to predict when the flu was going to break out in a certain region based on searches conducted in the days beforehand, before the outbreak of an endemic. This reminds me a lot of that, except that it's using AI and patterns that have happened as long as there's been news reporting.
Yeah, it definitely, it should be a helpful thing that they do with this. So it'd be good also to know before you buy a home or something to know whether that, even though it's in like a 100-year zone because of changes to climate, now maybe in every 5-year or 10-year zone, and you'd be much more likely to see that on a tool like this.
Robbie Stein, the vice president of product at Google Search, wants to assure webmasters that Google is working on teaching its models how to link out to sources based on query fan out. Google's going to add link cards to the most trusted sources that match various queries. It's well, I'm taking this story that you'll find at SE Roundtable to say that the VP of product at Google Search is trying to say to all of us folks, we're trying.
Also, as we know, Google's going to add core ranking signals to all the AI, right? AMO, AI
Which
overviews.
is what got us talking about the merging of Gemini and Search in the first place, or not the first place,
Yeah.
but definitely added weight to the evidence, eh?
So when he says quality sites, my question is because we don't know how they're going to use the ranking signals. We may not see the ranking signals. They just may use it in the citation pool to determine quality sites to pull into the citations. So it would be interesting if that's how they're using core ranking signals, but we don't know yet. They haven't talked about it beyond saying that's going to happen. So it's just interesting when he said quality sites. So.
So, Google is why do you want Google? You can't name it this way. Google's launching something called Ask Maps. For what it's worth, years and years and years ago, Ask.com was Ask Jeeves, a former search engine. They made a mapping tool that made Google Maps look like child's play. And Google stole a whole bunch of ideas off of Ask Maps. Now they're stealing the name, but I digress. This is actually a kind of a cool feature in Gemini that lets you ask complex questions about like locations on Google Maps and then get an AI generated personalized map. It's available in India. It's available in the US on Android and iOS. There's a desktop version coming soon. But the name, I mean, come on. You could have any word in the world and you chose ask.
And also, it's not just in Gemini, it's powered by Gemini. So it's in regular Google Maps too. The problem is, sorry, they keep adding all this stuff to Google Maps, but I couldn't find the time a store was open until I went six clicks deep into the map area. I had to get to two Google My Businesses before I could see the time. I'm like driving to the store. Are they still open? It's late, right?
Are you, but is that like user error or it's setting like
No.
if you set Google My Business wrong? then it's not going to be able to give the information
No,
out.
there were no hours. I had to click six clicks deep to get to hours. It was on a second Google My Business page. So, like, normally, I
That
don't know
should
in
be right up
Canada.
front.
Yeah, I don't know how in Canada it works, but usually you just look at Google Maps and it tells you the hours. It doesn't tell you the street, unfortunately, but it tells you at least the hours that it's open, right? And it wasn't there. And then I had to figure out what to click, and I forgot what I had to click, but it was something obscure. And I had to click that. And then I get to a Google My Business without hours. And then I had to click into a map and then a map again to get Google My Business with hours. It was insane. Like, so they keep adding stuff, but it's so bad for basic things right now that it's so frustrating. I try not to ever use it anymore because it's just so bad. So hopefully this will mean it'll be better. I don't know. But it could be like my bank where they expect you to like ask all the time now, and it doesn't just have a link to things, which I find incredibly frustrating. So there's a thing called forecast balance. Balance forecast shows you how your money normally spends during the month, so you know how much money you have towards the end of the month. And they changed it, so I have to ask AI now. So I have to open up the AI, I have to ask the bot, and then I have to wait for the answer. Then I have to select the account, which one I want to look at, and then I finally see it instead of just clicking balance forecast in the account. So sometimes I think these things are not necessarily helpful, but just seem like they might, and I hope that's not what Google Maps is doing.
Okay,
Sorry, pet
so
peeve.
I don't know if they are or aren't. I just see asking the
That's so
complex
frustrating.
question, hopefully get a correct answer. Okay, so you know how weird SEOs were when like Google started rewriting titles and meta descriptions for them? Okay, so
Still terrible.
if you were running Performance Max video ads, it's a silent ad. And Google thought that by adding a voiceover with words totally drawn from words found on your ad, like they're not making it up, it's words that you would have put on your silent ad. Like it'll select from from advertiser provided headlines or descriptions, and if Google thinks that it'll get more engagement, it'll create a voiceover from text found on your ad, which would be layered onto the base video, saved as a new video, and served in your ad stream. You can opt out of this.
Thank goodness.
But you're opted
Cannot
in
that of
now.
titles.
You're already you're by default, you're opted in. You've got to opt out if you don't want this to happen. I don't know how I feel about this. On one side, I mean, yeah, great, you're getting me more attention. On the other, you're screwing with my ads.
Yeah, and also you may want a silent ad, right? Because on my TV it happens. It'll go silent. I'm like, what's wrong with my TV? Oh, it's a silent ad, right? On your ad might be rolling through. When someone's doom scrolling is silent, may get attention. So to automatically add tech a voice may not be your intent to do. So it's good to let you opt out. It's under there's an email that goes out to people that have PMax accounts and asset optimization upgrade in your existing Performance Max video ads. All that information is in there.
By the way, you're deciding on this before March 20th because that's the opt-in date.
Oh,
And
really?
after that, March 20th, 2026. Yeah. On March 2026, all ads with video enhancement control turned on will be eligible to service voice enhanced versions of your videos. For ads that are already opted out of the video enhancement control, no action is necessary, said Google.
Isn't it at ad on each ad? Is this a general setting?
It doesn't say different in what I'm reading here.
Oh my gosh. Hopefully you can still opt out of it if you say yes, I want access to it.
Well, you got to opt out by March 20th. I don't know what happens after that. Is this an all or nothing? I'm
I
sure you can toggle the opt out back on
don't
if you
know. It's Google.
want
There are
to.
times like with UA where you get a deadline, that's it. So
You said no. We'll show you what no means.
exactly. Oh
Okay,
my.
back to the endless disavow debate. So, according to John Mueller, most sites don't need to disavow and don't need a disavow link file, but some sites do. Some sites may need to disavow links. If you're confused, if you're conflicted, if you don't know what to do, it's fine to set it up and use a disavow link file. But that's a dangerous thing to do. Chances are a few of your problems are from some seriously bad top level domains, but Google just like I don't understand disavow because Google just is
Oh, I
supposed to
do.
ignore crap ass
They don't.
links.
So here's the situation we had to do disavow, right? Big brand. I won't go through the long story, you know it, but it's too much time for here. But
Yeah, we are pushing time.
basically there's a man in the middle attack on their site, which means people redirecting traffic between you and the site. But the site had an open site search, which created pages that were indexable. So whatever you put in the site search would show up in the title, the description, the URL, and the H1. So they were selling porn, and there were 13 million links directed at those pages. Google did not disavow the links because the links mapped the page, right?
Okay,
There
so
was a
somebody sort of hijacks a domain, puts their spam on there, and then links to the spam page.
well, they didn't hijack it. They used the site search, which was open to index. So
Oh,
it
so
just,
it creates a page. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
right. So the pages said the words that the URLs were talking about, right? The other domains that were linking to them talk about. Google does this on a page-by-page basis, not the entire site basis. So the fact that the URLs were talking about the things they were linking to on the page where they used the site search that was open to be in, left pages open to the index, Google did not devalue those links. We were ranking, that site was ranking number three for a porn site name, because of the attack between the user and the whatever, but because of those links pointing to those pages surfaced. So you do in that case need a disavow because the links match the page. Every site, by the way, has a bunch of junk links. You do not need to do this if you have like 10 or 20% junk links. But if you have like 50, 60% junk links, someone's attacking you, it's a good idea. You just do it at the domain level and get rid of those domains, but be very, very careful. And only have someone who knows what they're doing, and do not rely on a tool that tells you a link is good or bad to do it. That's just an indicator. You have to have somebody who knows what they're doing. But yeah, there are times when you actually do need those the disavow.
No.
Yeah, not often though, not anymore. And they're not taking sites out of the index anymore for bad links, which they did with Penguin. And most
Okay.
people don't probably realize the original disavow tool was also to help Google surface all the networks that they couldn't find themselves that were selling links.
People were using the disavow tool to disavow huge swaths of links, including stuff that actually wasn't bad for them.
For thinking
So
that they, oh, sorry, go ahead.
After a while, Google started cautioning against using disavow unless you really, really, really knew why you were doing this.
Yeah, and also, people think that they should have no bad links, which is untrue. So they'll go to a tool like Ahrefs. I mean, sorry, not Ahrefs, or Ahrefs or Majestic. And it's
Majestic
like,
is the
oh, yeah, this is a bad link. And it's like, so they start disavowing all those. It's like, no, your normal link profile will probably have about 10 to 20% bad links.
And again, for the
Yeah.
most part, Google doesn't care. If it's
No.
a dodgy link coming into your website, Google will just ignore it. Now, you mentioned an edge case where people were like using links to manipulate
Yeah.
to specifically manipulate a page that they nefariously created themselves for their own nefarious purpose. I'm sorry, they legally created for their own nefarious purposes.
Correct.
But that's edge of the world case, not a normal case.
No, that's not. But there, people still try to use negative SEO. It doesn't really work
No.
with links anymore because Google just devalues them.
And they just don't care.
But if they think you purchased them, you still can get a manual action for bad links. You don't hear about it very often, but it does happen.
And there's a
So,
case where disavow
yes.
does work, because then you're saying to Google, okay, you know what? I really mean to get rid of these. I'm taking it seriously.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially if you're starting to accumulate lots of links all of a sudden, it's just a good idea. You know, suddenly 40% of your link profiles bad links, then it's probably a good idea to get rid of this.
So, when you're in Google Search Console, jumping stories again, when you're in Google Search Console, how much of the traffic you're reporting is coming from like branded search and non-branded search?
So
And
here's
honestly,
a
How
Yeah.
impressed is your client when it comes to branded keywords? Not
Actually,
terribly, right?
they do care. Surprisingly, a lot of them do know about it. I use a tool called SEO Gets that organizes this for me. I find that it's interesting. Google Search Console's product manager, who's seems to be a really communicative and good guy, is I think catching up with the tools that were taking GSC and taking it to the next 10 steps, because they're adding the features that I know these tools have. So in the tool that I use, I can just look and see branded queries. I can see it in a graph. I can see it in groupings versus non-branded. So branded is great, but you also want non-branded queries. And in some sites, you only have branded or you only have non-branded. So you have to have a mix of both.
Google Search Console has now created a one-click filter to filter in or out branded or non-branded search queries. They released it just actually, I think it was just released this week. It was announced on November 20th, but again, just released this week. The only problem I've got with it is I've checked it on a couple of different clients, and it only dates back to February 21st, 20th. Only dates back to February 20th. Everything before that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because you think they would go, maybe they will later. Maybe they just rolled out like the light version. You think they could just apply it to the 12 months of data that they have for 16 months. Google's brand classification is done with an internal AI-assisted system to determine where their queries are branded. So brand names in multiple languages can be determined, misspellings and variations, and queries referring to unique brand products or services. It's an article in search engine land. So it sounds like it's going to be a good thing. I'll compare it against the so the SEO Gets and these other tools use the Google Search Console API to pull data in, so they get more data. So it'll be interesting to see if they're similar or the same between the tools and Google Search Console.
Trending posts and discussions added to what people are saying. There's a what people are saying section within Google search results. Google's added trending posts and discussions under what people are saying. They've expanded search results to basically throw some more discovery stuff in. That's what I
Actually,
think.
this feels like a positive though, because like I keep track of stories in basically in my head all week that we want to cover because I've seen them, and then I
And
get
then
to doing the grid. I'm like, oh, which story was that? Like, because I forget to write them down. So this would be nice to be able to go look at what's trending on certain topics and find out if there's stories I missed. So I like it. Yeah, it looks pretty, and it's pretty well designed. It's just a little bit of extra box for you.
In Google Discover, Google is testing a larger headline image, so it'll look like a like more like a magazine type style than a banner across the top. So yeah, there might be a new look coming to Google Discover. And lastly, Google Discover is going follow widget home card, huh?
All right, the
Home
name.
follow widget.
Google, stop letting developers name things. Oh, it's like I had to read it five times, even with images, to wonder what it was. But basically, it's just a little card that goes at the top of Google Discover between the logo and the search box logo and the actual items coming up. The little rounded boxes. They'll say trending today, 4 p.m., and it has like sports teams or new you have championship get team updates follow. So it's just allowing you to follow information. I don't use Google Discover very often except to test it for clients. So but it looks like it'd be helpful, but it's taking up a lot of screen space. If you have
And
the hamburger menu, then the Google logo, then the search box, then the Mode AI box, then these, and then you get to your first item. So it's taking up like about 500 pixels of screen space, 400 pixels of screen space on a mobile phone. It's a
again,
lot.
as Christine just noted, Google, don't let your engineers name stuff. They're not
Right.
particularly good at it.
Yes, they really aren't. That's why you have two core updates now, and they're not the same thing at all.
Oh, hey, by the way, is there a core update happening? There's rumor that there's a core update happening. Is that actually going
No.
on, or is that just rumor?
But you know what? No. But you know what? Since we don't have an end story, I'm just going to bring this up real quick. I believe, because of what I'm seeing with clients and how Barry always has a volatility report, but no update related to it. I think Google's using discovered not crawled and crawl, I'm saying discovered not indexed, crawled not indexed on the page level to update things. So a client had a whole bunch of pages that went from indexed to not indexed, and they had the inability to fully render the page in mobile. And now that I fixed all those and resubmitted them, they're all back in the index, no problem. Like they went right back into the index. So feel like instead of updates, because we have so fewer updates now, so many fewer. Like we're having them like every couple months
Well,
for
remember
years,
Google
right?
said that we're going to run some and not tell you. We're running a whole
Right.
bunch in the background. We're just not mentioning it anymore.
Right. But they always did that, but they didn't do it. They didn't say it like that, right? So I think what they're doing is they're using the crawled, not discovered, unknown to Google, and discover, I mean, it's the crawl, not index, discover, not index, and unknown to Google classifications to move pages from indexed to not indexed without announcing an update. Now, I don't think this, because I've seen a lot of pages move categories on sites in the last year, and that's not normal. It doesn't usually do that. You'll lose a few pages, but you don't have regularly pages being de-indexed. And people were talking about this for about 2 years anyway. Like they find like 60% of their site was de-indexed, but there was no update. And Barry always having volatility, like how many weeks do we not see a volatility report, right? So I think what's happening is Google's using that as a quiet, silent update. The bad part about that is updates tell people what's wrong with their site and they need to fix so Google can serve better sites. So if Google's not telling people what they're doing and they're just moving things from indexed to not indexed under those three categories, because I had things that were unknown to Google that had been known, like which was really weird, right? They're indexed unknown. But I do believe that it's very possible that there are quiet updates running. I don't think it's a positive for Google though, because Google's product is really the sites that they serve. And if they're not telling users by a 50%, 80% decline in your traffic that we just address this about sites, people aren't fixing those things. And very few people have teams of SEOs who are looking at the state of their indexing.
I was going to say, I don't think people are looking at Google's crawled but not indexed, or any of their indexing files to fix websites. SEOs
Right.
do that, but most businesses don't have SEOs working with them.
Oh.
Google's been in Everflux for what, like 15 years now.
Yeah, but we had like for like from 2018 to like 2000, sorry to interrupt you, but 2018, 17, 2018 to like 2024, we were having update after update after update. It was a ridiculous pace of updates, right? And then
Well,
we were
yes,
supposed to have
but
so
Google was
many.
changing radically. It was introducing all the AIs that we're
Right.
dealing with today.
But the thing was, Google said last year we're going to have more updates than ever, and we didn't.
Oh, but I think that we are. They're just not announcing it.
Right. I'm saying I think they're doing it silently at the page level with the these three classifications, because I've seen things change so much, and also I've seen people get on talk to John frequently in the last year, year and a half, up to 2 years, where they're like, "Well, we lost 60% of our pages, but they're just de-indexed, like they didn't have an update." So how do we lose 60% of our pages? And just like, well, we just need to go check your quality and stuff, right? But again, I think if Google is doing this, it's not good for Google because they're not communicating to owners what's wrong with their sites. And very few people are checking the indexation of their pages.
On that, we gotta get out
I'm
of here.
sorry.
We've been, you know,
We
this is
didn't
almost
have
a
an
2 hour, this is
answer. I just
almost a
thought
two
of it
hour
now.
long show.
Oh my gosh. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, sorry, studio, but we love you. Anyway, okay, we've been around the clock almost twice. So, on behalf of Christy Chack and Different Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger, Digital Always Media. Folks, you've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcasts on the 12th of March, 2026. It's the Ides of March, duck and cover. Tomorrow's Friday the 13th, duck and cover, and we'll see what happens next week. In the meantime, friends, please be patient with each other. It is a really, really howling weird time out there. People are on edge and they're short and they're trying their best. So be your best with others too, and just try to give each other like as much slack and patience as possible.
Yeah.
Love each other, be kind to each other, rank well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.